Welcome to Unity Talks, where the hiring experts of Dallas-based recruiting firm Unity Search engage in lively discussion with successful business leaders to dissect their careers and how they got to where they are today, the obstacles overcome to reach their success, and steps they've taken to stay at the top of their respective fields. So listen in as we provide you with a thought-provoking conversation and ideas that keep industries moving forward.
And welcome back to another edition of the Unity Talks podcast. I'm your host, David Cathy, and we're so thankful that you join us on these podcasts. This is our fourth season, y'all, and it's our second guest of our fourth season, and I'm super excited to introduce Chase McTaggart. Chase?
Hey, thank you, David.
Thanks so much for coming to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was introduced to Chase by Michael Visentine, and Michael Visentine's introduced me to a couple of guests I've had on the show. And I got to say this. So first off, shout out Michael. Second off, you know, Michael is a connector, and I just sent a text message to another guy the other day. I refer to them as connectors, right? Because they just connect people. And he is the best connector in the world. And I'm sitting there going, I want to be a better connector. You know, like what a cool title to have is like, you're just known as connecting. You know who you'd be good to meet? This guy over there. And I want to do more. It's almost my profession. But I also just want to do more of it in general. So go be a connector for anybody out there listening to that intro. All right, let's get to it. By the way, this is, again, me feeling like I'm David Letterman with my little clip here. So I'm going to try not to fidget with it too much. All right, Quiet Man Negotiations. So tell us real quick, just a quick little two-second intro here on what is Quiet Man Negotiations?
Yeah, so Quiet Man is a I'm a founder and senior consultant on that, but it's a negotiation training and consulting firm. And so all we do is train people how to negotiate, down to the finest detail, down to every coffee, voice inflection, every little thing.
Love that. Love that. Here's what I think about negotiations. So Chris Voss wrote this book, Never Split the Difference. It came out in 2016. And, you know, in all of our lives, we negotiate all the time, but especially in our professions, that's what we tie negotiation to. And since 2016, it's like negotiation. I feel like that book kind of put it on the map because it's such a best-selling book. And people have realized there's so many different ways to negotiate and that everything that you do in life is a negotiation. I mean, you negotiate with yourself on whether or not to hit the snooze button.
Yeah, know? Absolutely.
Before we get too far into it, we're going to learn a little bit about Chase here. Okay. So, and I was talking with Chase, what was it? Tuesday, I think. So I'm talking to you Tuesday and you're from Terrell, Texas. And immediately I'm like, oh, okay. So I guess you wanted to be an actor because for whatever reason, just because Jamie Foxx is from Terrell, Texas, I think everybody in Terrell, Texas wants to be an actor, which is ridiculous on my part. And you said no. I tell you what I wanted to be when I grow up, and I love that.
Yeah, so when I was a kid, very early on, mind you, okay, so be gentle, but very early on, I wanted to be a pizza delivery guy. And the reason for that was I had just been watching like crazy Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze, and I thought that martial arts was a must-have skill for being a pizza delivery guy. And so that was what I wanted to be.
Yeah, I think that's so awesome that you wanted to be. I'm sure like mom and dad were like, oh my gosh, please no.
They were very supportive.
But we are going to learn a little bit about your career path here, okay? That's how we're going to start it off. And then what we're really going to get to here for is the, and I wrote it down because I didn't want to get it wrong. It's the top five things people should know about negotiations. There's probably a list of 100, but Chase boiled it down to not just, you know, the most important five, but just things that he sees that are so common. So we're going to get to that here in a second, but you've got an interesting career path. You know, from an education standpoint, you went to Texas A&M Commerce. Mm-hmm. You got your master's over at Texas A&M, or Texas, UT Arlington, sorry. But then your career path took different shapes, like wildly almost different fields.
Yeah, very, very much. So I started off professional career. So my bachelor's is in psych, and then I eventually got my executive MBA from UTA. But during that, I started counseling kids very early on, and I'm not built for that. Those kids have so many stories and stuff. I'm just not made for it. It's not who God made me to be. So I couldn't carry those things. So I stepped away after about 9 months. And then I jumped into business and I was doing essentially door-to-door solicitation and hated it. Just, I've yet to meet someone who was like, oh my gosh, it's my favorite, right? So, and then I moved into manufacturing where I kind of started on the ground floor and worked my way up and eventually ran that company for a number of years. And during that time, for about 10 years there, I was negotiating with heavy hitters in aerospace, chemical, and metals and mining industries. And that's where I fell in love with it. And so from there, I went and left and started Quiet Man Negotiations.
Why Quiet Man?
So that's funny. There's a great movie out there. It's an old John Wayne movie called The Quiet Man. And in it, number one, I'm a huge John Wayne fan, professed, huge John Wayne fan. But Quiet Man has a couple of things. One of them is it's very quiet. The way that we negotiate is very, it's not submissive, it's strategic. Right, you're pulled back, but you're listening, you're paying attention, you're asking good questions, and it's very different than the loud, brash, kind of abrasive nature that you see in movies. Mm-hmm. It's very different. But also, The Quiet Man with John Wayne, he utilizes several techniques that we use in that movie, and I just love it. He stands up to bullies and all kinds of stuff. So there it is.
So you stand up to bullies. I like it.
Yeah, teach people how to punch bullies in the nose.
There you go. I like it. Well, I'm gonna have to watch that movie. I'm sure I've seen it when I was a kid, and my dad had the remote control. You know, there's no doubt. It was either that or it was a war movie. So it was either John Wayne or some type of war, or both.
Or John Wayne, Iwo Jima. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. So let's hop to it. Let's talk about the five things people should know about negotiation. So I'm just going to go straight down this list. This is like the third or fourth time we've done a top five, top 10, top three. And so these have been really, really fun. I've really enjoyed them. So we're going to start off with number five here. And I'm going to read it. And you kind of tell us, we'll just have some dialogue on it, okay? Yeah. So protect yourself from inner pressures.
Yeah, so inner pressures are an interesting thing. You have these internal pressures that you have going on anytime you're negotiating, right? And so pressures to get a deal done in some way, shape, manner, or fashion. The inner pressures that I'm talking about are ones that you can control. There are ones that you can't control, but the ones that you can control, you should make an effort to control them. And so what I mean by that is, one big one, for instance, probably the biggest one that I could point to is if you go and you tell a bunch of people, you tell your spouse, you tell your boss, you tell Jim at the barbecue how this deal is going to happen and you're 98% of the way there and it just has to close and all of these things, and you build it up and you've got this great, you've painted this picture of what it looks like when this deal closes, how much money is in it potentially, bonuses, all that stuff to your spouse. Each one of those people has something in it that you're trying to get by telling them. So there's a pride element maybe when you tell Jim right at the barbecue. Mm-hmm. Maybe you want respect from your wife or your spouse. You want to be seen as professional and like you know what you're doing. And then your boss, maybe you just have to tell your boss some of these things. But he's going to go tell his boss. And when he does that, suddenly he has pressure on him, who then puts pressure on you. And so if you can handle those things and step away from actually sharing some of that information, ideally what that looks like is training the other party to know, hey, you're not going to share some of these things with me. And so educating them on that. Mm-hmm. And here's why, is because it's better for the negotiation if I don't tell you those, because then at the end of the day, I'm more likely to make concessions. When they start to pull away, not your spouse or anything, but the counterparty, if they start to pull away, suddenly you're confronted with this grief state of like, oh my gosh, like my boss and my boss's boss know about this. Jim at the barbecue knows about this. He's going to ask me how this deal went. And my wife knows about this. Am I going to like lose a level in her eyes? Like, what's this going to look like? And so you're confronted with three additional, in that case, grief states. And that's assuming you've been really good and only told three people. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And so just pulling back from that and letting your ego, kind of take the back seat is really, really powerful.
Yeah. It's ego's an enemy, right? I mean, there's a book out there by Ryan Holiday. Yeah, ego's the enemy. So it's really good. Initially, when I read that, so when I was reading these, I thought, protect yourself from inner pressures. I'm thinking of, okay, like, you know, controlling your breathing, you know, when you're talking to them, right? Because breath is pressure, right? So you begin to control. It's really interesting you went that way. It made me think of, like, kind of this ego thing, I guess, where it is. Like, you know, there's this, the battle of Jordan or LeBron. And people always say, like, LeBron's always talking about how he's the greatest. But Jordan never did.
Yeah.
Because he just let he didn't have to go out and tell people. He let his game speak for himself. So to relate that back to yours, it's like, I don't need to go out and tell people, hey, I'm doing this. Look at me. I've got this, right? Yep. It's just letting it happen at the negotiation table.
Yeah. And you can always share it after. If you really want to, mm-hmm. right? I don't necessarily recommend it, but you can always share it after the fact. Your wife's going to see the check.
Yeah.
Right?
Why don't you recommend
share it after? To not share it after, you mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's self-perpetuating a little mm-hmm. bit. And so if I share it after, I'm more likely to share it closer and then before. And I don't want to do that. So it's a bad habit for me. And so I don't do it. I've done all of these. That's why that's why I know.
Yeah. Sometimes that's why we become good teachers, yeah, right? Yeah. Is because we've done, you know, they always say that, you know, in order mm-hmm. to, like in AA for Alcoholics Anonymous, yeah. like you can only help someone go through it if you've gone through it yourself.
Yep.
You know, because you know what it's like to live that.
Yep.
Right. And they become good teachers and mentors and sponsors is what they call them. So. Yep. Yeah, that's good. All right, so protect yourself from inner pressure. Number four, I should say, we're going backwards, 5-1, is manage emotional temperance.
Temperature, yeah. Manage the emotional temperature
okay.
in the room, yeah. So what happens in a room is if it's real simple and it's you and one other counterparty, the temperature changes, right, as you're having these discussions. And so if you're at baseline and the other counterparty goes up to a level one, right? And it becomes a little bit more dominant, a little bit more aggressive. If you go up to a 0.5, they want to maintain that distance. And so they'll increase again, mm-hmm. right? And you can see where that goes. It's mm-hmm. bad. On the flip side of that, the reverse, if they go up one and you go down one, negative one, below baseline, you've rewarded bad behavior. And so why not go up again, right? Because now you've become submissive. The trick here is to stay right on baseline. So you stay baseline, use this calming voice. This is one of the things Chris Voss speaks really well mm-hmm. about is late night DJ voice.
Yeah.
Right? He talks about that late night FM DJ voice. That's really, really helpful. Keeping kind of the same tone that we're doing right now, right? Just friendly and direct and clear. And I can be firm. Firm is just not moving from your position. This is firm. I'm just not moving from my position on something. But I don't have to be a jerk about it, and I don't have to elevate the conversation in any way in order to do that. So keeping baseline, and what tends to happen is I stay baseline, they go to a 1. If they go to a 1 and I stay baseline, they either go to a 2 or they stay at a 1. They're happy with that. We're happy with a 1 difference. That's fine. Mm-hmm. If they go to a 2, then I stay at baseline, they might feel like they're being a little unreasonable, and they kind of bring it back down usually. Be the most reasonable person in the room.
That's really good. So how do you get to the point where you're able to do that? Because, you know, that's a lot of control, what you're asking someone to do. Because if someone gets a little bit excited, you're usually matching that temperature most people.
Yeah, we'll talk about it later, but it's preparation. It really is. Like doing all the prep work in advance. So knowing and going through your ifs and thens and the things that are potentially going to happen and knowing how someone could react and then cranking it up with my clients. We crank it up to 11. And I'm going at them pretty hard. And then when they actually walk into the room and it's a 7 that they have to deal with, it's cake. No big deal.
Wow. Yeah. It's reps.
Reps.
You're taking your clients through reps.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that you're trying to get them into the habit, or correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong here. But I would think that I want to be in the habit. So I'm viewing everything mm-hmm. that I do as a what state am I in, my mental right now and emotional? What state am I in?
Yeah, it's a way of life. It really is. There's theory, then there's applied theory, and then there's reps and practice stuff that you're doing.
I've heard Chris Voss speak, and he does. He has that same. He's almost like he has little certain inflections in his voice at certain points, but for the most part, he's just here the whole time. You know?
Yeah, he's always sounded a little bit like Al Pacino to me. Just a little bit.
I could see that.
Chris Voss.
Yeah.
You know, just a little bit.
Yeah. I could see that. So he's probably just done, I mean, it's years and years of practice of being in that situation and training himself.
Yeah, and one of them is slowing down the way that you speak to. People tend to match the way that you speak. Mm-hmm. And so if you go slower, and I think Andrew Huberman just interviewed Chris Voss on this particular point, but people's brains actually connect to the way that you speak at a slower pace, and the temperature kind of comes down in the room.
Wow, that's interesting. It was really weird when you did that because I felt like the lights went down in the room too. I'm like, how is this guy controlling everything?
Powerful.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. So manage emotional temperature. Number three, you are the captain of your own ship.
Yeah, so this one doesn't take very long, but recognizing that you are actually the decision maker, right? That you're not held captive to anybody. If you own the business and the worst thing that happens is a lawsuit and you go under, you get to make the decision if you're going to go under, right? You get to make the decision at each of these points. There's perceived leverage, perceived hierarchy, all these other things, but you get to choose if you want to go and work at the local grocery store, you can do that, right? And so you get to make decisions every step of the way, and that's really empowering for the clientele that I serve. To know that they're not being forced. They are being manipulated. They're being emotionally manipulated. People are trying to get them to do things that they don't want to do on a regular basis. And lots of times they give in. But they don't have to do them. And that's very freeing for a lot of people.
Okay, so that's got to be really hard to get them to that point, though. So you're a person and you need to close a deal for your company, right? Mm-hmm. Because you need your... You need some type of commission check or something like that.
Yep.
And so you are, I mean, everything rides on that one deal.
Yep.
You've got to think, I have no other option. Like, I've got to get this deal closed. How do you get someone to think, well, you have the choice?
So this goes back to number five about inner pressures, right? So managing the stress. You talked about breathing and anxiety and all of those things, learning how to work through that, learning how to deal with those external pressures that create internal pressures, that helps people get to the point that they can look at it and say, okay, I'm in control of this. I may not be in control of the outcome because you're definitely not, number one. Anyone can say no at any given time. Mm-hmm. But you are in control of how you do it. And so that's the part that you focus on, the mechanics. Jim Camp, one of the greatest negotiators of all time, wrote a book called Start With No. And I highly recommend anyone to buy it. It's the book that got me into negotiation.
Okay, so... You're in a negotiation, and sure. Maybe I should save this to the end, but I'm going to ask it now because I'm thinking about being in a negotiation, and we're in a negotiation for so many different things in our life. I could imagine being in a negotiation, and I want something to happen so bad.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I need this deal to close. So I am either, and sometimes it's both, I'm either hearing things that they're not saying because I want it to happen. So I'm like, oh yeah, they're saying yes,
yep,
whatever the situation. Or I'm not listening to things that are clues that they are gonna say no, or it's not a solid yes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'm so attuned to wanting this to happen. I'm either hearing things or I'm not asking the question to avoid it because I don't wanna know the real answer.
Yeah.
Because I need that so bad.
Yeah, so managing your neediness, first and foremost, is key. I mean, so key. And you do that by recognizing that the other party can say no at any time. It doesn't matter. They could just need three quotes, right? Mm-hmm. But they're going with their brother-in-law. You don't know, right? They could totally change focus. You know, you've done this negotiation for 9 months now, and all of a sudden, new ownership comes in. This has happened to me. New ownership comes in and says, you know what? That's not a priority anymore. We're going somewhere else. So don't count your chickens before they hatch is the big one. Back to Jim Camp, he talks about blank slating quite a bit, which is you go in to this this event, you go into the next coffee, and you focus on what's called micro negotiations, these little individual negotiations that occur. Coffees, rescheduling of appointments, all these things. And you go into those and you say, okay, let's just focus on this one. What's happening? What am I receiving right now? What's the signal this guy's giving me, right? And you just focus on that, blank slating.
Okay, all right, so I'm gonna go one step further down this path because this is really good. All right, so we're negotiating with someone and they give a verbal yes, but there's a contract or something else needs to happen, and maybe that's, you know, 3 weeks down the line.
Sure.
Okay? Do you celebrate that yes?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's not a yes. Even contracts that are inked can be breached, right? Huge corporations are notorious for this. They'll breach contracts all the time with smaller companies because what are you going to do? Sue your client? Seems like that's bad business. And so, no, I wouldn't celebrate.
So when do you?
General.
Yeah. When do you?
You stay very even keeled, and I wouldn't say that you actually like celebrate at any time.
Really?
Yeah. Even when the ink hits the paper, right, it's not necessarily done. If I were going to do it at one point, it would be when it's memorialized, ink hits paper. I wouldn't pop bottles of champagne.
Yeah.
I would just, like, hey, we got this deal, and
move on to the next one.
Yeah, move on to the next one.
Okay, so I'm gonna still stay on this one little thing. So
yeah.
Because you may be a person who isn't who's hearing things that aren't actually said, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you want the yes,
yep.
Or avoidance of asking the questions that you might get an answer that you don't want. So you're like, well, I'm not gonna ask that. Wouldn't it be helpful, I would assume, like if I'm going to talk to you, that I have someone else with me in that room? So like I'm talking to you, but they're on my team as well, and they're listening to the same conversation because we all have blind spots. So they're picking up on things because maybe I'm more emotionally tied to wanting something to happen. And they're tied to it because they want, you know, the person on my team, they want it to happen, but they hear things differently. They're a different DNA. They're a different person. So they're going to process information different than what I do.
Yeah. I think the benefit or the answer to that question is that you get better and don't bring someone else into the room. It's not a basketball game. I tell people,
mm-hmm.
Where if they have five, you don't have to have five. It's actually a detriment, right? Funneling it down to one person. You can only ask me the same question so many times, but you can hit my other four members with the same kind of questions, pepper it, start driving wedges in between each other, getting you to comment on things that guy said, and just bringing out all kinds of information that you don't want in there by having another party. I always recommend one person at a meeting.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right, so now we're down to number two. Fairness and reasonableness are used for emotional manipulation. What does that mean?
So these are super insidious terms, fairness and reasonableness. And it usually shows up and like, listen, David, we have to be fair here, right? Or, we really need to be reasonable about this. Those are the kinds of ways that it shows up, but it's insidious. And the reason it is what is fair? What mm-hmm. is reasonable, right? These are super subjective terms that people look at and they call on an emotional response, basically. They evoke emotional response because it's an attack on your sensibilities. It's attack on your own self-perception. What you want to be considered is honorable and fair and reasonable. You want to be all those things, but you don't know what they mean. And generally, the first person to say that something's not fair, in my experience, has become the arbiter of mm-hmm. what is fair. And so there's this very subjective thing that you're trying to fill and trying to prove. And so you run off and get something very physical, some form of concession, and you bring it back essentially with the voice of, aren't I fair now? Look at this. Mm. This is fair, right? Right? And then they just pick something else and say, well, you know, we have to be fair about this other thing. Right? And it's emotional manipulation at its mm-hmm. worst.
Yeah, we want to be congruent to core values, right?
Yeah.
And so when we use those terms, like we need to be fair, we need to be reasonable, you know, all those. Well, most people want to be congruent with that. And so that can cause them to do things that they, concessions or whatever, that they may not have to do or normally do.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean anything, right? Like all they've said is, can I please have something, right? Like that's literally all they've done. And a lot of people will run and bring concessions to them. So it's used for emotional manipulation all the time, whether intentional or not.
And so how do you combat that?
Honestly, usually I just let it fly by, and silence is a powerful tool. Most people that I've talked to can't stand 6 seconds of silence.
Mm-hmm.
And so kind of let it go and move right past it.
Mm-hmm.
You want to keep being fair. That's okay. We can talk about what you consider fair, but you have been very, very vague on what you consider fair. So mm-hmm. what are you asking for? And then cut the concept of fairness and reasonableness off from that. And now I have a decision to make. You want a 10% discount. Okay. Now we're working on something that's tangible.
Okay. Right? So, all right. So let me ask you this. I've often been told and read, you know, that people in a negotiation or a conversation, they'll use a straw man, right? Something ridiculous. If you and I are having a conversation, they're going to throw out a ridiculous argument that is so ridiculous and it doesn't really apply. It just applies really loosely. And the whole thought is, I'm going to make this such a ridiculous argument that I'm going to get you to think about this over here.
Yeah.
Okay. And so they just throw out a straw man where it's like, well, no, of course I don't want to harm kids.
Yeah.
You know, are you kidding me? Like, I don't want to harm kids. Well, I mean, that's what you're saying, that you want to harm kids. And you're like, okay, this, how did this even come up, right? And it's to distract people. And that would be along those similar lines, right, of emotional manipulation.
Yeah, for sure. That's a type of emotional manipulation. And it's way out there, especially in the business world. You see it in politics all the time, right? But especially in the business world, that's way out there. I haven't seen a whole lot of that, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think I have seen quite a bit of it where, some people call it reduce it to the ridiculous, you know? And so you reduce it to the ridiculous. Well, the ridiculous will never happen.
Yeah.
And so why are we talking about that? Let's stay on point. Let's stay on task here and let's solve this problem.
Yeah. I think I would try gentle bringing them back to the real problem at hand. And then what you can do is give them an easy no, like, hey, listen, it sounds like this may not be a good fit then if you think I want to hurt children. Hey, it sounds like this may not be a good fit. And if that's the case, that's cool. Feel free to tell me that. Like, you're not going to hurt my feelings. And then usually if they're playing a game with you, blah, 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 I'm not saying that, we're going to do. And now you're back on target. Now you're back on point.
It's funny how that happens, right? I was just talking about this with one of my business partners who was in a discussion with someone, and it's almost like he took it away. It's like, hey, that's okay. Look, like if you don't have time for this, we always call it the takeaway, right?
Yep.
If you don't have time for this, I mean, because we mean it too. We're not being negative about it. We're literally saying, I don't want to waste your time. I don't want to waste my time. So if it's something that you're not interested, that's okay. We'll be fine. You go your direction. We'll go our direction. And immediately that person started clawing back to get into the game. And it's not like we were using it for that. We were using it literally to say, let's not waste each other's time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's literally going to take us into the number one.
And here's the number one. Other people can already say no.
Yeah, recognizing that people can say no. So they can, number one. We just talked about how anyone can tell you no at any given time. There's a myth of closing, right? You hear people talking about closing all the time. I think salespeople vastly overestimate their ability to control a deal in general, as in regards to closing, for instance. But what you can do, or you can follow the mechanics, like Jim Camp said, you can follow the mechanics and work on those things. And so recognizing that other people can say no lowers the barrier to discussion, right? So if I say, hey, David, look, if this isn't something that you're interested in, feel free to tell me that. Again, you're not going to hurt my feelings. It's totally cool, right? You got to do what's right for your company, and you have to do what's best for you. Now we're having a real discussion. Mm-hmm. Right, about things. The barriers are lowered. If you're too timid to do this, because some people run what I call a playground playbook, and that means that when they were 5 years old or 10 years old, they learned how to say no or not say no, or how to deal with people through dealing with parents, teachers, peers, all kinds of stuff, and it's stuck and it's been honed over the years, and so they're very common with it. Other people are being very tactical and they're being very intentional about what they do. But doing that is the same for both people. If they're being very timid and you say, hey, if this isn't a good fit, that's okay. Feel free to tell me that. And they're just very timid. They'll come back and say, yeah, your price is 10% higher than the other person and I really can't do it. Great. Now you've got information. You get to make decisions.
Yeah.
Right. If they're being tactical about it and they're trying to mess with you and do some emotional manipulation type stuff, they'll come back and say, whoa, I'm not saying that we can't do. It'll be the exact same kind of conversation we talked about earlier. But they can say no, so running at it is really good. Instead of getting this incremental yes kind of thing where you line up two easy questions for them to say yes to and then you hit them with the third, or what political, robo-dialer type folks do, where they're just constant pressuring and they're trying to keep you from saying yes or from saying no in any way given fashion, right? What car salesmen do. We all hate that stuff. Why has it permeated the world of sales where they want to do that kind of thing?
Yeah, it drives me crazy when that happens. I mean, it really does, because the thing is, you know what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's blatantly obvious. They're trying to get you into this cadence of yes, 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 yeah, and so that then they lay the big question on you and you're like, okay, well, I've been saying yes. And you know what they're doing. And if you want to play along, like, you're answering their questions and they are yes, because they're set up that way.
Yep.
And it just, it drives me bananas because it is, it's manipulation is what it is.
Yeah.
And it's not sales.
No. And one of those things that you talked about getting the incremental yeses and stuff like that, lots of times that leads to ghosting. And so I have an anti-ghosting protocol a little bit.
Okay.
I'm not going to go into here, but basically, like, if you give them the opportunity to say no and you make it really clear that you really are sincere, and you have to be sincere about this because people's ability to detect deception is really, really high compared to people's ability to give deception. But if you give them that no on the front end and make it very easy for them to say no, you're going to get a lot less ghosting as opposed to someone who you've pressured and pressured and pressured, and you're telling them that that's how you're going to deal with them. Yes, yes, yes. It's like the guy at Best Buy. No, I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm okay. And then like 2 seconds later, you're like, hey, by the way, where are the iPads?
Yeah.
You know, you're just used to trying to push away.
Yeah.
So,
It's crazy to me that a two-letter word is so powerful and so infrequently used in a professional setting. And here's what I mean by that, because I used it a lot when my kids were young. No, no. But in a professional setting, what I mean is if you're a person, and it's likely people listening to this podcast, right, they want to climb the corporate ladder, you know, and they want to move up the ranks. And so they take on a lot of work.
Yeah.
Right. And they're willing to say yes. And sometimes that's really good. You know, the younger you're at in your career, it's like, yeah, I want to sign up for that project. Yes, I want to do that. Yes, put me in front of it. And that's great because they get recognized, assuming they're doing a good job and all that good stuff. But anytime you say yes to something, you're saying no to something else.
Yep.
And that can be a trap that you get into. And I always remember, like, I'm reminded of, like, Warren Buffett. You know, people used to talk about Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger, and they would say, like, Warren would say, yeah, well, if you want to grow a business, you know, list down, you know, all these ideas or things you want to do. Okay, well, go back and circle your top three. Okay, now scratch out and the other two and only focus on, and now what? And he goes, now say no to everything else.
Yeah,
because you have to focus on this one thing, and it's so rare to do. I don't know why that is.
I don't know. I do know that I think, if I remember the story correctly, that was to his pilot.
It was.
Buffett's
pilot. Yeah.
And he told him, now cross out all the other things. He said, those are the things. Pay attention to those things because those are the things that are going to keep you from doing your top five or your top three or whatever the number was, because those are the biggest distractions from them, the other things that you want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. What I would say is it's decision. Everything is decision based. And so if that's where you're at in your career and you want to make that decision, you want to say yes to a bunch of stuff, I get it. I get it. I've done it. If that's where you're at and you say, I don't want to say yes to those things, it's a decision. You get to say no, right? You are the captain of your own ship, whether that's work or otherwise.
Yeah. Hearing no, it's almost as if, I'm thinking about this more, it was your number one thing. Other people can say already say no, and I get that. Hearing those words, I almost feel like, because I mentioned, you know, you'd say it to your kids all the time. And I just had this thought. Were we conditioned to hear that no was a bad thing when we were kids, right?
Yeah.
Because our parents would say no. Often it was to protect us. Sometimes it was because they had a bad day at work or they were grouchy or whatever the case, or they were just tired of us because we asked 100 questions. But then we got conditioned to thinking that no maybe is a negative.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's the other way too. Like I know with my kids, I haven't done a very good job of this, but I know with my kids, they're 8 and 5 right now, or 9 and 5 right now, just had a birthday. And I have worked really, really hard to get it where they can say no to me and I'm okay with it, where it's not some rebellious thing. Mm. As long as it's done in the right attitude, right? It's not some rebellious thing. That they don't want to do that, and not chores or any, you know, stuff that is kind of a command and less of a up for discussing about things, but where they can say, no, I don't want to do that, or no, I'd rather do this or something like that. And they get a little bit of say, specifically because of that. I'm trying to help them understand that they can say no, for themselves so that when they grow up, they're set. But I know, like in, you know, teacher settings, for instance, educational settings, if a teacher said, hey, you know, do you want to do this, or are we going to do that, or hey, do this? You know, the idea of saying no to Mrs. Smith.
There's no way.
Yeah, it's a big deal. Or you could, and then wind up in suspension.
Yeah,
or, you
know, some whatever. Of the consequences.
Yeah, whatever.
Suspension. In my days, you got licks whooped. With a paddle.
Yeah.
Those were not fun. Go to the principal's office, you know. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. This top five is really, you know, when you and I were talking just the other day, you know, I said everything that you do is a negotiation. Yeah. Everything that you do, you know, you're sitting in traffic. Are you going to let someone in or not? And you're doing this in your head, you know? And so, you know, you're in line to get a coffee at Starbucks, you know, you're talking to the person at Starbucks, you know, whatever it is. Those are all of these places, all these little things that you think are just habits in your life.
Yeah.
Maybe they are. At one point in time, they were probably in negotiation. So there's so much opportunity to practice. Do you advise your clients on different avenues to practice?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. I advise people to, number one, get that book, Start With No by Jim Camp, and then start practicing it out. Hire me. There's somewhere of that in there.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, there's definitely things that you can do throughout the day, right? And so if you're having a discussion with somebody, I mean, just that easy no that we talked about, right? Like, hey, if that's not okay, if that's not something that works for you, tell me that. That's okay, right? Just implementing that will change your mindset. Adjust down to the what Chris Voss calls the late night FM DJ voice.
Yeah.
Adjust down to that and see how it goes with your next conversation with your spouse where things are starting to get a little loud, right?
Yeah. I think that's something that I could work on is just that voice, like slowing things down. Because I think of like when you're in the zone in sports, you know, like if I'm a batter and I'm at the plate and I'm in the zone, the pitch comes slower and I can pick up the seams and I know what the pitch is going to be. And so I can time my, you know, swing a little bit better and usually hit the ball further, harder, all of the above. And that's from repetition and that's from practice and that's from seeing it a lot and tying it back to this, you know, you kind of want to get into the zone. And when you get into that zone, everything seems to slow down, you know, but you can't just all of a sudden get in the zone. You've got to take practice and you're going to fail a lot. Right. And that's okay.
Yep.
You're not dead. We're not, hopefully, you know, you're going to fail. But that's okay because you can get back up and you can practice again tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's really good. Okay, so final question here, something I ask everybody. So people are leaving, they've listened to this, and they're like, well, where do I start? You know, I mean, he said get the book, and maybe I should email Chase, which if you're at that point in your life where you think maybe you should, then please, you know, connect with him on LinkedIn, I believe is a good place to connect with you.
Great place.
Yes. Okay, so do all those things. But you know, what is one thing that you would leave for someone listening to this podcast to begin tomorrow that's practical, that they could begin tomorrow?
Yeah, so the number one thing, hands down, for this would be prepare. And I know that's not the sexy thing that everybody wants to hear, but it's the real thing that everybody needs to hear. Most people's version of preparation for a negotiation, number one, they only view a negotiation as the last 10 to 15% of a deal. Those negotiations before that all impacted the trajectory to get you here. So focus on the next coffee. Focus on the next rescheduling of the appointment. How am I going to respond to that email? What does that mean? Focus on all of those little individual micro negotiations. That's key. But prepare for each one. Most people think that, you know, 15 minutes behind closed doors with one of their teammates is plenty of time. It's not. It's just not. You have to deal with, if you're walking in with emotional baggage, you need to deal with that. If you're walking in with without a reason for having the conversation, you need one. If you're walking in without having like cemented things that you're not going to do in the conversation, you need those already prepped and ready to go. So there's three things right there that you could sit and do, and you could do spend some time doing them that are incredibly valuable.
Yeah. Okay. So let me touch on that quickly then on the prepare thing. So I do all this preparation, Chase. I'm like, all right, I prepared. I'm really good. I've rehearsed. I've thought of what if questions. I've got them in a parking lot and I'm doing all this stuff. And then I get into the negotiation. It goes great. 5 minutes, wham, bam, thank you, man, done. I've just learned I probably wasted 45 minutes of preparing, an hour of preparing for a 5 minute that was easy. So how do I just not fall into the last time it was piece of cake?
Yeah. So it's people think that, and I hear this all the time, right? But people think that it went 5 minutes and it was, you know, just wham, bam, incredible. And everything was amazing and boom, all done. And therefore I wasted the other, you know, 45 minutes, like you said. The fact of the matter is it went so well because you put in 45 minutes of work on this. You prep and you prep and prep. Let's use a baseball analogy. You prep, you prep, you prep, you prep, you prep, you prep, and then home run. How long did it take to have the home run? Very little time, right? But it's a prep that went into it that made it the way that it was.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy how our mind can trick us into so many different things, right? And one of the things that I've said it on here before, there's an author, his name's John Gordon, and he often says, you know, don't listen to yourself, you have to talk to yourself, right? And your mind can say, you know, if you're listening to yourself, oh, you don't need to put in all that work. You know, remember last time it was so easy, we just got through it really quickly and it all landed great. You know, but you have to talk to yourself and build that habit and build that routine of this is the prep work I put in.
Yep.
And this is why people in my office call me a closer or whatever that is because I'm actually putting in the work. And often the thing is that work is done in the dark, right?
Yeah.
People don't see it.
Yep.
You know, they just see the deal. Yeah. Success isn't sexy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Nobody wants to go see the movie about the guy. Hey, do you want to go see the movie on Thursday night? You know, the one with the guy who had a great deal and, you know, the relationship that lasted 5 years and everything was good and happy.
Yeah.
No, I want to go see Wolf of Wall Street or something. Right?
Yes.
Like, I want to see somebody stand on a conference table and yell and get the deal. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, Chase, man, this was great, man.
Yeah,
I really appreciate it. So these were just five, and we actually probably had a few bonus ones in there, too, just from the conversation that we had. There's so much more than this. And if you want to find out how much more there is, then you need to connect with Chase on LinkedIn and have a conversation, and he'll be right there helping you out through this. In fact, actually, I want to – you had mentioned something to me one time in one of our conversations, and I don't know if it was like, well, oddly enough, David, or actually I do have a focus, and that is in helping females with negotiations.
Yeah, I have a specialty in women's negotiations of all things, and it was odd how it started off, if I have time to
– just hit me, and I thought
no,
that's really important to, like, bring out here.
Yeah, yeah. So I work with both. I just find that women are more likely to want the service. They're more likely to come and ask for help. And so the same system really for both, but there's different hurdles and different things to overcome specifically for women than there are for men. And so what I found, that I was doing all these lunch and learns and stuff and the speaking engagements, and women would come up to me afterwards and say, how can I engage you? How can you come teach my team? Can you help me with this and do some training for me? And so I started doing scientific research, not my own labs, but researching articles and the like on gender pairing. How does this look? What does this look like when a woman is negotiating a man? What does it look like when a woman's negotiating with a man who is also on the same team as a woman? And what do the dynamics look like? How do they view each other and things like that? And it's fascinating work. And so I wound up kind of specializing in this.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. And that was Chase. Thank you so much for joining us each week. As a reminder, we record one every other week, and we're so thankful that you join us. And until next time.
If you're looking for the next step in your career or the missing piece for your team, Unity Search has you covered. Whether it's finance and accounting, tax services, information technology, or human resources, Unity Search is here for you with experienced and dedicated hiring professionals. Reach out today and take the next step. Unity Search, placing you first.